Andy, how's it going, man?
It's going well. It's going well. Yeah, other than it just being a very dreary 4th of July weekend. Yeah, everything's going well. Getting caught up on what felt like a big backlog of stuff at SaberSim. But yeah, I feel like we're making some good strides on our process, and I'm getting slightly better at delegating. So it just feels like a little bit more sanity is working its way back into my life. So I'm thankful for that. But I know on your end there's a lot to talk about. There's some big news.
There's
Do you
some
want to share that
news.
with our listeners?
There's some news. So we'll be announcing either today or a couple of days before this episode goes live that we just closed a funding round, about $750,000, and I guess what would be technically called like a pre-seed round since it wasn't priced. But yeah, I mean we've been working quite hard behind the scenes on this for the last like 6 months, and it's nice to have closed it. I feel like it's a huge achievement. But I mean, here, like, instead of just bragging, you really want to talk through the process and share kind of what I learned, and hopefully it's helpful to folks that are like thinking about doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I do feel like everyone always says, oh, you don't celebrate the fundraising, like that's just when the work begins. And that's definitely true. But I think you at least get a weekend to celebrate and just kind of pat yourself on the back and be like, all right, we got it. But now the work does begin. We got to get shit done. There's a bit more pressure and all of that. But I'm curious, going back, what was the impetus to get you to seek out a good chunk of money?
I mean, so like, first of all, we didn't mean to raise. We weren't aiming to raise this much. We were oversubscribed by about 50%, which is cool. I think that's like a really good sign. But the goal was, you know, we see this opportunity with private podcasting, and just like the market going this way and a lot of interest around it, us getting inbound interest around it. To where we say like it's time to like get the resources to put them in place to really explore this and really go after this side of the market, because it just adds a whole nother avenue of growth. You know, like the conventional hosting for us for shows like this is absolutely still there, but the applications for private podcasting are really interesting, changing a lot, and there's just a lot of interest in the space. And so we wanted to say like, let's get in there and do as much damage, you know, in a good way as we can, as quickly as we can, instead of just like, hey, we can bootstrap this and we can hire, you know, an account executive in 6 months. Let's go hire two right now, plus a head of growth, plus another developer now, and you know, just advance all of that to today.
Yeah, is that really the drive? I guess it's saying, okay, what I'm trying to figure out is, in your mind, does it all come down to timing? Because I think a lot of listeners and a lot of people in the microconf and Bootstrap community are fine with the steadier approach. But I'm wondering if what cha and I think in a lot of cases you have you it's not that you haven't had drive or ambition, you always have, but I think in a lot of cases you haven't been that far away from that camp either. And so I'm wondering is what changed it to say, okay, like we really need to push heavy right now because you're trying to be at the start of the wave, or is there something else where if you're in a different space, you would still want to front load a lot of the work?
Yeah, very much the first one, right? And like it goes all the way back to like why we joined TinySeed, and that's kind of like the first step down this path, I think. And this is the next step, and you know, there may be more steps after this with like proper, you know, venture money. But yeah, we look at this opportunity, one, just in the podcasting space in general, right? Like last week, Amazon bought one of our competitors, Art19, for, you know, like $80 million or something, and you're just like,
What do they do? I've never even heard of
they're
them.
just a hosting platform, you know, like us, but you know, bigger and fancier and all, you know, more kind of enterprisey, whatever that means in the podcasting space. But yeah, I mean, we just see all of this movement and all of this venture interest and PE interest in the space and say like, what do we need to do to maximize our chances of a good thing happening there? And I think taking financing and giving up a small percentage of the company is a thing that puts us in a better position than if we didn't. You know, we have more people, the company's more stable, it extends our runway, it lets us experiment with some things and like take a bigger bet on entering the private podcasting space in a really meaningful way, as opposed to like, you know, me doing selling and the 10% of the time I have free, you know, and us, you know, cobbling together some marketing stuff. But like, you know, we hired Sam a few months ago, really knowing that this was going to happen. And he's amazing. Like, he's put all of this like funnel and like customer acquisition stuff together just in his first few weeks. We're on the path to hire 2 salespeople right now, to come in and like take care of that funnel, and those leads and really start like moving business. And like, I just wouldn't have the confidence to take that bet and hope that it works out and we don't run out of money, you know? And so now like, we just have a lot longer to make that happen.
How are you thinking about burn rate? And you don't need to get into exact salaries and all of that, but just generally speaking, this I think is a question that matters a ton. And I don't hear it talked about that much, or maybe I'm just not listening to the right places, but when you're raising a bunch of money, if you go the venture track route, there's different rules of thumb where it's like you want to last you like 18 months because your goal is to get the next raise in the next 12, and it gives you a little bit of buffer on that. But I know you're considering staying on this track. If things pick up speed, there's no reason not to keep raising, but I don't think you're putting yourself in that corner exclusively. So when you're not exactly sure, will there be another round? How are you thinking about managing the burn?
Yeah, so I think that we're a little more conservative because what we're doing is relatively new for us, you know, like this, the private podcasting space in general just isn't that old. We've seen success so far. There are definitely companies that specialize only in this that are much bigger than us. And so we feel like, you know, the market's there, we can find the customers, mm-hmm. our technical solution is there. We just have to make it happen. And so like, yeah, I'm not as comfortable as saying like, we're gonna spend like all this money will be gone in a year. Like that's really aggressive to me. When it comes to burn rate, typically I've kind of had a rule of like, I want to have like 10 times our burn rate in the bank. Yeah, that's like kind of been my rule. And yeah, so that and I think that kind of still applies. Maybe we could get a little more aggressive than that, but probably not much, just because that would be crazy to think about.
Wait, to make sure, I'm probably just thinking about this wrong, but if you have 10 times the burn in the bank, your monthly burn?
Yep.
So then wouldn't that be less than a year of runway?
Yep. I mean, and I guess as we're talking about this, like I think about it in smaller numbers, it's not that bad, right? If you're burning like 5 or 10,000, then like if you have to, you can let one person go and then that's like resolved. So yeah, I mean, maybe I need to be more conservative than that now, because, you know, you're talking about, you know, 50 grand a month in burn or something like that is like a lot. And that's a lot of people and a lot of things to unwind if you needed to. I think the other part of it is a bit of a timing thing, is like, we want to say like, okay, we put these people in place and they hopefully start driving business or making the product better to where our growth starts accelerating. And like, you need some time to let that happen to then see, yeah, like, okay, with this new person in place, like, okay, we're gonna hire these salespeople. Our burn rate is going to be X. Revenue is not going to change on day one, but at month 3 with those people in place, it should. And we need to reevaluate it at that point.
This is kind of a weird question, but it's like, for the things you're hiring for, how many of them are entirely new functions, like the sales stuff, which I know you have at the past with Podcast Motor, I had a salesperson. But yeah, how much is like newer things that are bets versus building out existing functions?
Yeah, so I mean, the sales folks are the only new ones, and okay, the other ones, I mean, I count us hiring Sam because we did that knowing we were going to raise money. And then, so that's one. We've hired marketing people before, so that like is not new. The kind of twist he takes on marketing and the role he fulfills is quite different than Denise, you know, who worked for us before. And then the other one is like developers and product people. So like that, we do pretty good with that.
Under Sam, what is the marketing team? What does it look like right now? And then will that change with the extra funding?
Yeah, I think that's one of the, like that's probably the next hire we'll make. So we made an offer, it was accepted for a front-end developer yesterday. We're having last round interviews for salespeople like next week. And then we'll kind of be done for a while, let that kind of go. And then like, I think it's time to look at marketing to fill the pipeline for the salespeople. One of the things that we'll look at is paid acquisition, and that's like an agency, and we got the agency picked out. And so that's just like, you know, working with them and getting the copy and the assets in place and stuff like that. But marketing is Sam, who's our head of growth. And Sam, like, as the twist he takes on marketing, or the place he fits into marketing, is like lead acquisition for sales, you know? So like he's marketing driving sales, as opposed to like marketing driving the organic kind of inbound stuff. So like from there, I think the two things that would be interesting for us is someone to supplement the non-written content that Matt creates. So like podcasts, YouTube, webinars, live streams, all these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is like, we have been working with a writer and an SEO person for a very long time. And I think to really like solidify a like head of content or like head of inbound marketing. Because like Sam's, and Sam, if you listen to this, it's not a surprise. I've told you this, like Sam's strength is not getting leads, but like not getting people to the website, but like converting them onto a list and nurturing them in HubSpot and all this kind of stuff. And so it's just that next step above in the funnel to say like, how are we writing content? How are we getting people on the site? What does the site look like? How do we then get them to, you know, fill out a form or a lead magnet or start a trial or whatever? And so like, I think someone just a little higher up in the funnel to help us just grow that part of like the lead acquisition. It is not like a huge step. Like it's just a slight evolution, from the people we have and the things you're doing.
You've done some experience with paid ads before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so with this, at that point, was it just going to trials? There was no salesperson in the mix, right?
Right. Yep.
And so is that basically what do you think is going to be different this time?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're looking at running paid acquisition to like the Castos production services and to like private podcasting for companies. Just, you know, both of those are much bigger ticket items than, you know, $20 a month hosting.
How deep in the conversations with agencies have you been? Like, are you at a point where they've set expectations for how long it'll take to see if this is working or not, and how much you'll need to spend? Like, how far down that road are you?
Yeah, so we're going to work with the folks we worked with before. They're great. And they got us set up on, and we still have paid acquisition running for the hosting side, but really, I mean, we spent a bunch of time and a bunch of money and found one pretty small channel that worked. And we've just been letting that run. And so they kind of helped us get set up and find that channel and everything. And that's just been on autopilot I check in on it and optimize a little bit, but you know, the better part of a year. I mean, we've worked with them, they understand the space, and to the degree I can be, I'm pretty confident and they can help out, you know?
What are the assumptions that you're making that you think have to be right for this to all work out? Because from my perspective, actually, like I think the riskiest part of taking money on is when there's always gonna be risk, but when there's a lot of just question marks in the funnel of, okay, we do this, then we do that, then don't know what happens and profit at the end. I feel like talking with you about this, you have like a pretty clear path where, all right, you have someone who's great at capturing leads and getting those over to the sales side. You have people who are going to be taking those on the sales side and converting them. And you have paid ads as like it might be expensive, and maybe the metrics right away don't work exactly, but you can drive leads through that. And then a bet on the side is, okay, let's also supplement that with some more organic stuff. None of it seems insanely risky to me. I mean, there's some execution risk, but from your perspective, where do you see the most risk? Like, what are the assumptions that you think have to hold true, or that you're most concerned about holding true to make it all work?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's two that I spend a lot of time thinking about. One is getting the right people in the AE roles, because the other part of it, which is there's quite a bit of unknown about how we're going to acquire leads. Once we get leads, the conversations are amazing, and like we have really tight alignment between like what they want and what we offer, and pricing and packaging and execution and all of that. So I feel really good about that. Getting sales reps or AEs in who are not just like comfortable, but are really cool with uncertainty and have that entrepreneurial spirit to kind of figure stuff out, which is where we are. You know, like I think a rep who, you know, used to work at whatever company X that just had 500 sales reps and a bunch of SDRs and stuff like that would probably not work well with the kind of environment that we are. So like that is a big one. And I think we've screened and like interviewed to where at this point we have a handful of folks that are pretty much to the last round. And I think all of them could be very successful. And I think the other part is we need a lot more leads, and how we get those is a big question mark. Like I'm pretty sure that the people we're going to hire are going to be great. The big question mark is it paid? Is it content? Is it partnerships? Is it organic, you know, content marketing? Is that kind of just like industry awareness there? Yeah, but that's only, there's a handful of things that you can do, and one of them will work. One of them is working for these other companies. And so that's just what we have to figure out. And it's going to take 3 to 6 months to figure it out. But that's kind of the next most important thing.
Does Sam own that part of he is attracting the leads? Like who is owning the number of leads?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yes, Sam owns that. Sam owns that. And like Sam is not the only person that's going to be involved in right. demand gen, but ultimately it comes down to him. Yeah.
What are the other, I guess when it comes to the sales side, you are looking for entrepreneurial AEs. You're looking for people who can get in. They don't need this tried and true playbook. But I also don't think it's going to be purely a Lord of the Flies thing. Like, you're going to be helping, I'm assuming.
Yeah,
Like, will you be overseeing that and coaching a bit as well?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the other part is, like, we're doing a lot to free up almost all of my time to work with the salespeople.
Okay.
To where, you know, things with development and product are handed off. Support is good. Working with Sam on marketing, you know, and Sam's getting his feet under him to where I need to be less involved there, to where I can just get the sales folks on and help them get up to speed and start driving leads.
So do you see it as, just trying to mentally picture the structure where it's, you have the people in place so that you almost have the department heads that are reporting to you to handle the other responsibilities. And then when it comes to sales, right now you're sort of the head of sales.
Yep.
And that's the only part where you really have too much day-to-day involvement. And then beyond that, it's you're checking in with the managers, the department heads, and they're going to their teams and doing the day-to-day management. Is that about how it's shaking out?
Yep. Yep. That's right.
And then is the plan, once you start building out more of a playbook and things are working, to bring in a head of sales who's had experience building a sales team?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, I think that's where, like, you talk about more funding, that's when all of that would happen, you know, is like, we're going to be two sales reps. Maybe we'd hire three or four or something like that. But then when we really prove the model of acquisition and conversion and retention in a, like in an enterprise, like sales world or even mid-market, you know, sales world is bringing someone who's able to grow and build that team, SDRs, account managers, you know, like the sales organization can get pretty big, but obviously like drives a lot of revenue. And so, yeah, I mean, I have no concept of how to like grow a sales team. I mean, I could figure it out, but I think that would be really, that would like money really well spent is hiring a sales director, but that's, you know, a year away at least.
Right. No, honestly, it makes a lot of sense to me because especially for the stage you're at where you are stair stepping. And you're not just kind of, and I remember when we were first talking a long time ago, not that long ago, but what seems like forever ago, about raising a bunch of money and then doing like an ad network and going in very different directions. And it's like, those can work, but that's a bet the farm kind of a play where there's so many unknowns. And yes, if you get the right people in, you can make it work. And if it does, the payoff is huge. But again, the risk is just very high. Whereas with this way, yeah, there's things you got to figure out. As long as you manage to burn, it feels like you can figure that out. And yeah, it's like, you got to figure out getting the leads in. You got to figure out making sure you can sell them. But you, especially with, I think you're right on with getting the leads. The demand gen side is the bigger question mark, because like, you have sales experience. If marketing is driving qualified leads, you can sell them. And then it's just a matter of finding the right people, figuring out how to train them and all of that. But like, that part is, it's not that it's going to be easy, but you could step in and do a lot of it if you have to. Mm-hmm. Whereas that's not really the case on the marketing side. But once you get those pieces figured out, I think that's when the next round makes a ton of sense. And it's a logical, like, easy story to sell of just saying, hey, these were our bets. They're working. We have a playbook now. Now we need money to scale this out wider. Because we know what's working. I think that's where, not even really in our world, but it's kind of the traditional startup world. Do we have a lot of people first getting into it? They're not thinking about what investors are looking for at different stages. It's in the very early stages, you can get somewhat far on the story and the vision. But then when you start building things, you need to show traction in some way, show learning. And I think, yeah, these steps you're going through, you've already shown a lot of traction. Now you're taking the next step. And once you get there, it's like, all right, like, yeah, the reason more money would help is because we know that when we put this many dollars into these channels, we get this many leads and our AEs mm-hmm. can close this. Yeah. We think we can get up to this point, and we want to test out some other channels, but like, there's still going to be a few bets, but it's just that next step.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, we sold the vision and raised the money on a little bit of traction and a little bit of that funnel and those metrics. But a lot more, you know, this is what we're seeing. I've been in the market for so long that I just think this is a thing. I mean, we have a lot of data and a lot of traction, that like, we couldn't have raised $5 million right now, 'cause we don't have that track record of sales. And I think that like, when you're talking about raising a bunch of money, I think very few companies do it in a marketing driven, like self-service kind of economic environment, right? It's like, maybe you don't need the money, or maybe like the market is not big enough and you can't grow fast enough via like self-service sign-up marketing. Like, I think people raise money to drive sales for the most part, like at this point at least.
Unless you're in like a very consumer focused, it's like a mass market play.
Yeah.
And you just need money until you figure out revenue down the road. And you're just going for pure growth. It's like, if you're in our world, it has to be to build out a sales team, really.
Yeah. And I tell you, man, like the hiring or the recruiting of salespeople is really fun, but really like, it's such a big deal. Like, hiring these people and getting it right is such a big deal. That it's been pretty stressful, and just a lot of uncertainty. Like, I've not done a lot of it.
And right now, I guess, where is the uncertainty? Where are you primarily feeling it? Is it around, are they the right people? Is it, are we going to have enough leads for them? Like, is it, where, what parts do you feel at the sharpest?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of kinds of salespeople, right? And so I think getting the person that, again, like, is entrepreneurial, is good, like they call it full cycle, like you would call it like a full stack developer, a full cycle sales rep, someone who can do outbound, someone who can nurture inbound, and someone who can like close deals. And then even kind of like do a little bit of like implementation and onboarding, like getting somebody who has technical experience and has sold SaaS maybe, who is that full cycle rep and has done outbound. Cause like,
you're looking for someone who's doing all of that.
Yeah. I mean, that is a person, right?
Right.
Like, and we want to hire two full cycle reps instead of hiring an SDR who really focuses on like outbound and qualifying and leads, and an AE who, you know, closes and onboards them. We want to hire two folks who can do it all for a lot of reasons. One, like, it's kind of like best practice. You know, those people are competitive against each other. You as like sales leader have two people to compare, you know, especially in like in a bit of an uncertain environment like this, like how will I know if they're good or not? You know, it, maybe it's just versus me, but like this is only, you know, maybe it's 20% of my time selling right now. Like how can I grade a single rep doing this all the time? But if you have two of them, then you can grade them individually and versus each other. But also it's a little bit of safety to say like, we're going to hire two, and if one doesn't work out, we still have one, you know, like, and I think that's in the sales world, especially like that, those first 90 days, like if somebody's not doing anything, then it, that's pretty well accepted that like they will want to go look for a new job and you will want them to also.
Yeah. Cause the structure that I've heard, so it was Ryan Bourne from Cloud Campaign. I think they just raised between 3 and 5 million, and they'd raised a little bit before, but he was talking about, they do pods where I think it's two SDRs for every one AE. And then whenever they hire in sales, like they hire a pod and that's how they look at it. And I think it, you're right in the sense that if you only have one of a role, it is hard to measure that against someone else, especially when you don't really have benchmarks. It's not already an established thing.
Yeah.
I just think, yeah, you do then have you're looking for a bit more of a unicorn where it's the jack of all trades, and it exists for sure. But do you think that's I guess to make it worthwhile, I would have to assume that if they are doing outbound, it has to be to much higher end clients. Like they're not going to be spraying as much as an SDR would, I would assume, right? Or yeah. what do you think that looks like?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you mean like the percentage of time they'll spend doing outbound?
Yeah, and I guess just to make it work, like to be able to spread themselves across all of those things, it just feels like the average deal has to be much higher than if you have someone doing lead gen through outbound. If you have an SDR and an AE, mm-hmm. I feel like there's enough there where the AE's focus can specialize on just really closing, and the average deal value doesn't need to be as high. But if someone is just owning all of it, I would assume the average deal has to be a little bit higher. But maybe I'm not thinking about it right. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I've not thought about it like that specifically. The benchmark that I have thought of and have heard of is like $10,000 annual contract value as kind of like the mark above which sales really starts making sense. Okay. And so like we definitely have things we sell that get there. And part of this is expanding upward in that respect, like going up market and things that we do in pricing and packaging and, you know, services and technology that we offer. I haven't thought of it in terms of like, does a full cycle AE need to sell higher value deals as opposed to an SDR and a sales rep? Yeah, I don't know. I haven't thought about it really, I guess. And I don't think that, like, to be fair, I don't think that outbound is going to be a huge part of what we do. But someone who's never done any outbound and doesn't understand it, I think it would be challenging because, like, we do need to generate demand. And like, these people will need to do some of it.
You want someone who, if there aren't enough leads to keep them busy, they're able to go out and find ways, like find leads themselves.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, the cush job is like I know the like head of North American sales for Chartmogul, right? And she's like, I have the best job in the world because I just have all these inbound leads that are free trials, right? And they just kind of pick the high value ones, and that's her pipeline. And like that, I agree. That's great. That's not how this is going to work for us. And so like we need to find people that are looking for this thing, right, through content or ads. And we need to go kind of generate demand via outbound things, you know, email, LinkedIn content, like outbound content. So yeah.
Awareness, did you consider working with in the past you had worked with an SDR agency basically, and you just didn't really have the bandwidth to see through the leads. Mm-hmm. Would you consider working with an agency like that again?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think once we get these folks in and get them settled and everything, then, and we've learned so much since then that like messaging and targeting and things like that, and even just like mental space to manage that agency, like they didn't need a lot of management. They were great. But just like, hey, this is working, this isn't, I followed up on this lead and this is what they said. Like, we just didn't have any of that shit in place when we were doing that before. And now like, we're gonna have two people waking up every day thinking about this, plus Sam, who like, that's a big part of his job, that like, I can imagine that that outbound agency would be much more effective now. So yeah, that's definitely something to think about.
What would make you not want to go with an outbound agency?
Just price, I think.
Yeah.
Just cost.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Because I guess to me, and I'm not trying to just like, I know you how much you've thought about this, so I take this for
granted. No, it's helpful. I mean, it's super like, helpful to if, be challenged.
If like there's this. If a major concern is the number of leads coming in, and you've worked with an agency that has shown they can drive leads, I would work with them because that's going to get, ultimately, I think it's, I don't have enough hands-on experience with sales at all to say whether or not like SDR than an AE makes more sense versus full cycle. Like I have no idea. I just have my thoughts and they're probably not that accurate. But I would just say though that the higher value part, unless they're able to go out and land like six-figure contracts, the higher value part is going to be the closing. And so if you can get someone who can drive a bunch of leads in, or at least enough leads in, that you can get a better idea of how the AEs do on closing, how the salespeople do on closing, I think that would be valuable. And I just think that would get them through the most important reps and de-risk the more questionable parts of the business.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still like, then at the end of the day, like you were saying before, this is where money helps, but it's not an endless fountain of money. And you've got to figure out, all right, like where do we need things to be? What's our burn? How conservative do you want to be? Cause it's easy to just go on like, all right, if we just hire all these agencies to try each do one different tactic for a lead gen, then we'll have a ton coming in and then we'll be able to close and this will work out fine. But it's like, if one thing goes wrong, it all can come crashing down. So it's a balance.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad we were able to raise the amount of money we did because like we wanted to raise 500,000 and in hindsight, if we had raised 500,000, we would have been hampered pretty quickly. You know, we would have been like, okay, we can hire a sales rep and a developer and maybe one other person. Whereas now we're able to take a little bigger bet and try more things all at once. And I'm glad that it worked out like that because I think that's what we need to do.
Yeah, and I think that's super valuable advice. And I've heard it before where it's always raise more than you think you need. And so I was like, well, like I've written this out a lot. I've done different models. Like I have a good idea of what we need. And it's just, there's never once been a time, not that I've raised that frequently, but like there's never once been a time in any sort of project or business where I'm just like, oh yeah, like that number was spot on. It's,
I don't know what to do with like, this well, money. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And so, we'll have a lot to talk about on our end in the coming months as we're not really fundraising. But we might be looking at injecting some capital from the partners, to accelerate growth. And it's just figuring out how much that would be, what that would look like. And yeah, it's just from the last time around, I'm just like, all right, like this is my plan. And if everything goes according to plan exactly, this number would be plenty, but it never works out exactly like that. Things take longer and this and that. And I think we've learned enough to get better velocity on things. But at the same time, I've also learned enough to realize that like, count on things not going right.
I mean, and like the process is so hard and takes so long that like to have to go do it again right now would be just soul crushing for me. So I'm glad that we have like this little bit extra to where like we can take more bets and figure this out, and that gives us another 3 or 6 months to where we don't have to look at raising money again. Very, very happy for that.
How long was the entire process? Because I actually think from the outside, it seems like, I know you thought about it for a while, but it seems like the length of when you started having conversations was not crazy, but how long was it?
It was about 6 months altogether. Oh, from like, okay, when I very first started like putting together a pitch deck and everything. And honestly, and like in just transparency, like at one point we were like, yeah, we're just not going to do this. Because mm-hmm. like we got some interest and people were interested and stuff, but we didn't have that like tipping point. And then we got that in the form of like a lead investor. And then the rest of it was quite a bit easier from there.
Yeah. And I think that just speaks as well to the fact that you should probably raise more than you think, just so if things don't go according to plan, you have longer before going through it again, because it is a distraction. Yeah. And when it all works out and you're able to get the money and you're able to go down this path and the path is a fruitful one, then yeah, it's worth it. But there's definitely opportunity costs. You're not able to focus as much on the current business, on everything else, and you get stretched pretty thin. And so getting an extra cushion so that you have even just a few extra months of not having to worry about that is worth it in my mind.
Yep, absolutely.
No, I'm excited to hear about more of these hires. I know we're going to have a lot to talk about as you kind of go further down this path. And I'm excited to hear how it all shakes out. If anyone has any tips or suggestions or questions, whatever it may be, as always, don't hesitate to reach out at podcast@seekingscale.com. This was a fun one, Craig. Super excited for you guys.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it. Bye, everyone.
All right. See everyone. Thanks for listening.